I've got to get out of here. I've got to get out of here.
Calm down. Get a hold of yourself.
Just let me handle this.
I've got to get out.
I'd been married for 4 years when I realised my wife had been having an affair. We got married when we were quite young. I was 19, she was 18. We then moved to Exeter for university, spent 4 years there, and then moved up to Bristol. And after a couple of months of being in Bristol, I just began to sense that something wasn't quite right. Couldn't really put my finger on it. But then I discovered a conversation she'd had with a guy on Skype. Which was pretty harrowing, to be honest. As soon as I found out about this and confronted Holly about it, she actually moved out. She went to stay with some friends, which was really hard for me because I wanted to speak to her about it. I wanted to try and reconcile and find a way forward, but she really didn't want that. She just wanted some space away from me, and that was. Really hard. That made it even harder for me, not being able to speak to her and see her. Many sleepless nights, just wondering what was going on, why was this happening, and you know, the person that was supposed to be closest to me, a bond that was supposed to last a lifetime, had just been torn apart, and I was absolutely devastated. I can't describe the pain of going through that and not being able to see her or speak to her or find a way forward just added to that. But really, God, through all of that, wanted to bring me closer to him. And he used that in an amazing way. Even from the very first weekend, I went to church with my parents and just had a really strong sense of God saying to me that he wanted to bring me back to himself. And what I began to realise was that I'd put my relationship with Holly at the centre of my life. And that was my first priority. When actually it should have been God. And so it's really the first stage for me in recovering from that and moving forward was to bring God back into the right place in my life, put God at the centre. And then everything else was then followed afterwards and was built on that. I think forgiveness is one of those things that it can seem impossible to do when something like that's happened. And there are a lot of misconceptions about forgiveness that are barriers to us moving forward, but really what God was telling me through that time and teaching me was that forgiveness was just a choice that I had to make. It had nothing to do with Holly, and I had to forgive her. I needed to forgive her because of my relationship with God, and because what God had done for me. And it wasn't right for me to hold on to that bitterness, and holding on to that bitterness and unforgiveness really was just going to ruin my life. And so I'm very grateful that God, from a very early stage, was bringing that up and drawing that out of me. The marriage never recovered. We ended up getting divorced just under a year after that happened. But now, 6 years on from that, actually, I'm in a much better place. I'm in a better place with God. I'm in a better place in myself. My life is just completely different to what it was before. It's quite a remarkable change, and one of the things that God was really teaching me through all of that is that he works all things for good. That's what Paul says in Romans 8:28. We know that in all things God works for good for those who love him, and seeing that in one of the most hardest circumstances, one of the most painful events of my life, I've seen amazing good come from that, and I've seen God use that in incredible ways. And being able to hold on to that, being able to know God's faithfulness through that, has really helped me grow as a person and grow my relationship with God. There really is hope. There really is, the future is bright. If you are in Christ Jesus, there is hope, and God is faithful and can heal any broken heart. There is nothing that he cannot recover and redeem. And I'm still having to work through some issues from that time. I'm still carrying wounds that are surfacing in different ways. But really, I'm experiencing again and again that God can and does heal those things and help us to grow and become stronger.
In that video, Chris said, there really is hope, and I believe that. But I also know that the pain of a breakup is very, very real. In fact, some psychologists have done recent studies to try and find out what's going on when we break up in a relationship, what happens in our brains. And they discovered that actually the pain of a breakup is similar to a physical pain. When you break up, when you think about that breakup, when you're affected by that breakup, there's parts of the brain that are activated, which are usually associated with the pain of being burnt, of physically being burnt. And I don't want to come across here and make light of any of this. I don't want to say that this is an easy thing. I don't want to be glib about this. I don't want to just say that I've got quick fix, easy solutions, that I've got a silver bullet that will make it all go away. But I do believe that there is hope. But we have to be absolutely real about these things. We have to talk about them. You know, one of my favorite verses in the Bible, it's from around about 1,000 years before Christ, the ancient wisdom writings of Solomon. And he says that each heart knows its own bitterness, and no one can share its joy. No one else can share your joy, and no one else can share your bitterness. And you may not have been through a divorce like that. You may not have been through something so traumatic to find out that your wife is having an affair and discover that. But nonetheless, whether it's a romantic relationship, whether it's a close friendship, or whether it's something with colleagues at work, when we go through breakups, when we go through that kind of difficulty relationships-wise, it is incredibly painful, it affects us at a raw level. You know, we are social beings. We're relational animals. That's what makes us tick. That's what gives us our sense of meaning and connection in life. And when you lose a relationship, it actually messes with the way that you feel about yourself, your own identity, the rootedness that you have with the world. And breakups can be absolutely devastating. And I thought about putting hands up, but I don't need to have people put their hands up to know that every single person in this room tonight, you know what it means to be to experience breakup. You know what that feels like. And for some of you, it might be, you know, fairly major things. For others, it might be smaller relationships. But we all know that. The thing is, it's the after effect. We can't protect ourselves from going through breakups in relationships. You have to do relationships, and you have to do them with imperfect people. And they will let you down, and they will break your heart. And that's going to happen from time to time. But what we can do is we can work out how we respond, how we actually react to what goes on. And the problem with most people when it comes to relationships and breakups is that you come across smaller. You get hurt and you say, I'm never going to let anyone hurt me again like that. Or you go into a relationship and you think, I'm never going to give away my heart so easily. Or you get into a relationship breakup and you just feel anger and resentment and bitterness towards that other person. You want to see them suffer. You want to see them fail. You want to see them fall. It makes you a smaller person. It makes your heart a smaller place. It makes your future relationships smaller in every aspect. And what I want to say today, and what I want to look at, and we want to be practical about this, but we want to be real, is we want to say that there's the ability to come through a breakup in relationship and actually to be bigger, to actually not be diminished by it, to be made small, but to become bigger. In fact, if there's a word that I feel like God would like us to hear today, it's you're bigger than this. Turn to the person next to you and point to them and say, you're bigger than this. You're bigger than this. You know what I really should be saying, and what you should be saying to one another, is you should be saying, you can be bigger than this. You can be bigger than this, but it does take a lot of effort, and it's not an easy thing to pull off. Now, for those of you that are here and you're maybe not into the whole church thing, you're not sure about your relationship with God, maybe your friends brought you, maybe you're just checking it out, maybe you've got a thousand and one questions, and maybe church has not been that great to you in the past. Look, for those of you, some of you, when you're in that position, the problem that you have with the Bible is that you think the Bible is only good if people want to find out how to pray, how to sing songs, how to be pious and be kind to the poor. And you think, when it comes to things like my broken heart and his cheats and ways, you think the Bible can't help you in that, but you're wrong. Respectfully, you're wrong. In fact, the Bible goes out of its way to highlight areas that we struggle with, to be able to say, look, these are not perfect people. These have been through the same things that you have been through, and they can show you a way forward. So when it comes to breakups, actually there is a breakup. There's breakups, plenty of breakups in the Bible. And I want to just highlight one of them to you because I think it's a really interesting one. And this comes, it's actually a friendship breakup, but it was more than a friendship. It was a real strong partnership. So there was a kind of a work dimension to it. But really, you know when you meet someone and you just get on with them so well and you got this great kind of repartee and you just do stuff together and you think, yeah, you really compliment me. You make me better and I make you better. And together we've got this great thing. When that breaks apart, it can be just as painful as a kind of a marriage or a romantic relationship. And these characters, we'll see them. They're in the book of Acts, chapter 15, a guy called Paul and a guy called Barnabas. This is what it says. Sometime later, Paul said to Barnabas, let's go back and visit the believers in all the towns where we preach the word of the Lord and see how they are doing. Barnabas wanted to take John, also called Mark. Everyone say Mark. With them. But Paul did not think it wise to take him. So fairly okay, everything sort of, you know, we're discussing it. It's all sort of fairly measured. He didn't think it was wise to take him because Mark had deserted them in Pamphylia and had not continued with them in the work. They had such a sharp disagreement that they parted company. Wow, that escalated fast. I mean, that got out of hand real quick. Barnabas took Mark and sailed for Cyprus, but Paul chose Silas and left, commended by the believers to the grace of the Lord. He went through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening churches. Okay, now some of you are thinking, well, I don't understand, that makes no sense. I need to give you a little bit of Bible history, a little bit of Bible background. You ready? Okay, it'll be short and painless, but follow me on this. If we look at the map and we bring in the kind of area where these things take place, this is the Middle East. Map comes in super slowly. And you're going to see a number of different cities highlighted on this map. And so you've got the different countries. And down here, if you can see, there's Jerusalem just at the bottom by the Red Sea. You've got Antioch, which is in Syria. And then you've got Tarsus, which is in Turkey. Now, what happens is that the early church, when it started after Jesus was crucified, rose from the dead, the early church was based in Jerusalem. That was where it all hung together. That's where the main people were. But there was such persecution that these Christians were hounded out of Jerusalem. There was, you know, it's actually this guy, Paul. Paul was from Tarsus, but he was one of the rising elite. He was a Pharisee. And if you've ever heard things in Sunday school or at school assemblies, you'll know the Pharisees were kind of opposed to Jesus. Now, Paul was a leading Pharisee. He came to Jerusalem and he just got the church out of there. And so the church kind of regrouped in Antioch. And that is actually, funny story, that's where the church, followers of Jesus, were first called Christians, in Antioch. So it's a big place, it's a big deal. But meanwhile, while everyone's moved to Antioch, Paul himself becomes a Christian. It's amazing. He has a dramatic life-changing reversal where he sees Jesus and becomes convinced that Jesus has risen from the dead. And what happens is that he tries to go down to Jerusalem and says, hey, everybody, I'm a Christian now. It's okay. Come out of hiding, church. I'm really a big deal. And I'm the real thing. And no one wants to be with him. But this one guy called Barnabas, who is his home nation is Cyprus. He comes to Jerusalem, he listens to Paul, and he goes back to the rest of the church. He says, this guy's good, he's okay. And so they all relax and they have a bit of peace. And Paul goes back to Tarsus, he's minding his own business. And then Barnabas, who is actually, his real name was Joseph. Barnabas was a nickname which literally means son of encouragement. Everyone say son of encouragement. Which in Bible terms basically means, like we would call him, Mr. Encouragement. Because this guy is so encouraging, he's so positive, such a great people person. So he goes over to Tarsus. He grabs a hold of Paul. He says, come with me, and I will, I'll bring you into the church in Antioch. And so Paul is taken by Barnabas. And so Barnabas and Paul and Barnabas, they are just, they're such a great fit. And what happens is after a couple of years of them being leaders in this mega church in Antioch, they decide to go and spread the news of Jesus all over the kind of the Middle East. And so they go on this big journey. And Barnabas says, look, they take this journey. Barnabas says, right, let's go first of all to my home nation of Cyprus. There they come very slowly. So they touch down in Salamis, then they spend time there, they go through Paphos, and then they take a boat, they get into Turkey, they touch down in a place called Perga, and from there they go to Pisidian Antioch, a different Antioch, and there Iconium, and then Lystra, and then Derbe. And the computer crashes out of sheer excitement, because it's a really exciting thing that happens. And once they've done that, they beetle back to Antioch. They're away for about 2 years. And then they go and they base themselves in Antioch for the next 3 years. Paul and Barnabas are a fantastic team. They just get on well, so well together, because they mesh, they mix well. They complement one another's gifts and abilities. So Paul is Mr. Project. He's project orientated. And Barnabas is Mr. People. He's people orientated. And so they're able to be the best of both worlds. Barnabas is big, soft heart. Paul is big, tough love. You know, Paul has big expectations of himself, big expectations of everyone else. Barnabas has big encouragement. He's like, you can do it, you're okay. Paul's like, you better not fail on this because I'm expecting big of you. But, you know, don't worry. And they get together and it's so good. And it's so powerful that it changes the world. When they go to all these churches across Turkey, they see people becoming Christians who are not Jews. It's a brand new thing. It's a first. And they go back to the church in Jerusalem and they say, we need to change everything. Everything we thought we knew, it needs to change. Because people outside of Judaism, they're becoming Christians. And they need to be allowed to do that. And so the Jerusalem church, they make this council and Paul and Barnabas speak and others don't like it. But Paul and Barnabas win out because they are the dream team. But like it said, in Perga, the guy that they brought with him, young guy, John Mark, he was from a rich family, he was like an up-and-coming kid, he was doing well, and Barnabas said, oh, I got this kid, I want to bring him with me. He gets to Perga and he just thinks, man, this is too heavy, this is too hot. I mean, we are getting stoned, we're getting thrown into prison, we're getting abuse. I don't want to be in Turkey right now because it is a dangerous place to be. How things change. And so he bails, he moves out, he bounces, he leaves them. And Paul's like, that guy, he let us down big time. And so 3 years later, when they want to go on another journey, and Paul says, let's go visit all those churches that we started, and let's encourage them. Barnabas says, let's give the kid another go. And Paul says, no way, I'm not taking him. He let us down once, he's going to let us down again. Once bitten, twice shy, not on my watch. And this thing suddenly breaks up. And the word that it uses, it says that they had a sharp disagreement. That word, sharp disagreement, is one word in the original Bible. It's only ever used one other time in the Bible. That's in the book of Revelation, where it talks about a cataclysmic event, where their heavens are ripped apart, torn asunder. Their relationship is ripped apart. Unbelievably painful. And we never see Barnabas again, after this chapter, which is probably why some of you don't know him that well. Because after this, he just drops out. And Paul's best friend, I mean, his guy, the guy that brought him when no one else would listen to him, the guy that gave him his first break, you know, the guy that picked him up and said, I'm with you, I'm with you all the way, bud. I'm behind you, I'm for you. The guy that he spent 2 years traipsing around Turkey, and the guy that he was in literally in prison cells, back to back, against the crowd when they thought they were going to be killed. That guy. That relationship, they can't be in the same room anymore. They can't go on the same journey anymore. They have this massive ripping apart. Breakup. It's a breakup. And instead of being big, they both become really small. And things just get really sour. But the great news about Paul and Barnabas is we know from the rest of the Bible that they do reconcile and they make it back together. And Paul is able to talk about forgiveness, and he's able to give us a little bit of a roadmap And so what I want to do is I want to give you a bit of a survival guide. So we're going to go into the survival guide again. And this survival guide that we've got, Hard Times Survival Guide, the first thing that it says, you have to act bigger. Everyone say, act bigger. What I'm talking about, act bigger, I'm talking about forgiveness. I'm talking about forgiveness. Forgiveness is an incredible act, and it requires you to be a bigger person than you already are. It requires you to be a bigger person than you think you can possibly be. Forgiveness is a big act. You have to go big or go home. Forgiveness is something that small people cannot do. Forgiveness is something that only big people can do. And more than that, forgiveness makes you bigger. This is what Jesus says about forgiveness when his disciples ask him. Then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times? And Jesus says, you've got to be bigger. You're bigger than this. Jesus answered, I tell you, not seven times, but 70 times seven. And the disciples, because they're not too good on the seven times table, you know, that to them was like a million, billion, gazillion. They're like, no way! Who can possibly be like that? A big person. Someone that's really big. To forgive. Forgiveness is the only way that you get out of this. Forgiveness is the only way that your hurt is going to be released. Forgiveness is the only way that you're going to be able to survive this in a way that you want to. That's not going to leave you diminished, small, hurt, broken, petty, vulnerable, a victim. Forgiveness is the thing that will make you bigger. But you need to understand, and Chris talked about this in his story, he said that people have misconceptions about forgiveness, what forgiveness really is. And I want to tell you what forgiveness is not. You see, forgiveness is not the same as condoning. Because some of you, when I talk about forgiving the person that's done you wrong, forgiving the person that broke up with you, forgiving that guy that just used you for sex and then moved on and left you feeling like a used up tissue, you think, if I forgive them, that's sending out the wrong message. That's sending out a signal that says, it's okay, it's fine, it doesn't matter. It's not a big deal. When it really was a big deal. So I can't forgive them because that just minimizes their offense. That doesn't do justice to what they did to my heart. I can't just move on as if it nothing. Look, forgiveness is not the same as condoning. Forgiveness has got nothing to do with me condoning. Forgiveness is not saying, this is not a big deal, this wasn't something that hurt me. Forgiveness, I can forgive someone and still say, I absolutely think that you did wrong. I absolutely know that this was a big deal. I absolutely know that you hurt me at a very deep and profound level. I'm not condoning what you did, but I am going to forgive you because they are two separate things. I'm not going to protect you if that means that there's even, you know, legal things. Sometimes breakups can be so ugly that actually there needs to be consequences to this. And I'm not going to just shield you from those, pretend that it doesn't matter, because it does matter. But I am going to release the hurt, the bitterness that I have. Secondly, forgiveness is not forgetting. You know, because he comes up to you, or she comes up to you and says, well, you're supposed to forgive me, forgive and forget, right? No. You don't necessarily forget. Now, if it's a small, no problem kind of thing, then we always say, yeah, fine, we've dealt with it, let's move on, we won't talk about this anymore. But when there is major pain, a major problem, I can't forget about that. I don't want to forget about it, and I shouldn't forget about it, and I'm not telling you to forget about it. Forgiveness is not forgetting. Forgiveness is, I know what you did, and it changes things, but I'm still not going to be bound by you, I'm not going to be hobbled by you, I'm not going to be diminished by you. And then finally, forgiveness is not reconciling. Now, reconciliation, it can happen, but it's not the same thing. Separate thing, okay? Separate preach, separate talk, separate series, separate everything, okay? We can talk about reconciling. We're talking about forgiveness now. It's not the same as reconciling. It's not like, okay, so we're all good now, it's fine, I can come back into your life, it can just take... Listen, when you have a breakup, when someone lets you down at that level, sometimes the relationship never gets back together again. You may have a different kind of relationship, and that's cool, and that may take a bit of work, but it's not the same. Forgiveness is not about that. Let me tell you what forgiveness is, and I want you to listen to this and then read it with me. This is what forgiveness is. It's a healing act done in your present that releases hurt from your past so it doesn't rob you of happiness in your future. Let's read that together. Forgiveness is a healing act done in your present that releases hurt from your past so it doesn't rob you of happiness in your future. bear with me, just one more time. Forgiveness is a healing act done in your present that releases hurt from your past so it doesn't rob you of happiness in your future. Forgiveness is about you. It's about your heart. It's about your wholeness. It's about you becoming bigger. Forgiveness, when Jesus says you've got to forgive more than you think you can, more than you feel that you've got the capacity to, not just seven times, not just a few times, because you can somehow find a way to humanly do that. I'm talking about something so much bigger. You know, when you don't forgive someone, as the saying goes, that's a bit like drinking poison and hoping that the other person dies. You know, when you don't forgive somebody, you give control over your life to them. You give control of your emotions over to that person. They still have the ability to control you, to be in your life, to be changing your personality and changing your options and impacting your future and your present relationships. And sometimes people say, well, I'm going to forgive them, but they've got to come to me and they've got to apologize. When they apologize, I will give them my forgiveness. That's such a wrong thing to do. That's like saying, I'm going to give the thermostat for my heating and put it in the other person's house so that they can now control your atmosphere. They can now control how you feel. They can now control your comfort. If you don't forgive someone, what happens, and you know this, what happens is that you hear their name. Or someone talks about them, they come up in conversation, and you feel that icy thing in the pit of your stomach. Or you feel your heart rate beginning to rise. Or you feel your blood beginning to boil. And you know you're not free, that they have got you on a string. And what forgiveness does is it cuts the cord. Forgiveness says, you hurt me, but I'm going to walk away from that hurt and I'm going to keep it in the past. If you don't forgive, that hurt will carry on and it will accompany you into everything in the future. You've been hurt in one relationship, and whether you like it or not, if you do not forgive, then you'll bring something of that hurt, that pain, those consequences into the subsequent relationships that you have. You won't be the person that your partner needs you to be. You won't be the friend that your friend needs you to be, because you're still tied to the past. It's a cord. And what forgiveness does is forgiveness says, I'm releasing you. I'm not going to be controlled by you. I've got too much at stake in the future. I've got too much to live for. I've got too much riding on my happiness to allow you to dictate it. I want to be free of you. I want to be calm about this. I want to be able to hear your name mentioned in a conversation. I want to be able to walk down. You know, some of you, you've been in town. You're in Cabot Circus. You're walking down the street. You've got a nice bag of shopping. You're whistling to yourself, zippity-doo-dah. And then you see them walk around the corner and suddenly your mood sours. Everything changes. You're now in, you're feeling angry. You're feeling all those negative things rise up. And you think, withholding forgiveness is going to affect them? Wrong. It's not going to do them anything. They're having a great time. They're going about their life. They've moved on. They've made friends. They're having a wonderful time. You know, they don't. It's not. It's you that gets impacted. You drink poison and you hope that they will die, but actually it's doing you harm. Now, I know this is hard. You've got to act bigger. You're bigger than you think. You're bigger than this. But this next one will help make things easier. It'll help you understand what's going on. You actually, back to our survival guide, not just act bigger, but you have to think bigger. Because when we think bigger, we begin to understand what's going on with the person. And there's a question that you need to ask yourself. And this is, I'm not minimizing that this is hard, okay? I get this is hard. But just consider for a moment, what they did to you, was it weakness or was it wickedness? See, when someone hurts us and when someone breaks our heart and when someone comes and tramps all over our emotions and our self-worth, what we tend to think is they're wrong, they're a bad person, they're so low, that they're just toxic, they're a skank, that, you know, they've done all these things to me. You think they're evil and you think that they're wicked, but actually, most of the time, it's not pure evil, it's not pure wickedness, it's actually good old-fashioned human weakness. You know, again, one of my favorite psalms, Psalm 103, David, when he writes, he says this, God does not treat us as our sins deserve or repay us according to our iniquities, for he knows how we are formed. He remembers that we are dust. In other words, the reason that God can forgive you when you break his heart is that he knows, he understands. Actually, you're weak. One translation says, we're made of mud. You know, we are human and we're weak and we are fallen. And the miracle is, God takes people like us with all our flaws and our failings and our weaknesses, and he lifts us up, he elevates us, he puts his spirit in us, he puts the personality of Jesus in us and makes us reflect his glory, transforms us to be more like Jesus day by day as we give our lives to him. But we need to allow, sometimes people do stuff to you because they were weak, because they made bad judgments, or they were lacking wholeness in their own life. And sometimes when you think like that, it helps you get over stuff. I wanted to come up with a little illustration, so I went into my garage and I did some work. This, ladies and gentlemen, is part of my kitchen. Okay, not literally part of the kitchen that I have. It's an extra bit. Don't worry. Okay, it's okay, Kate. But I remember when I went with Kate into the showroom for the kitchens, and the salesman showed me this piece of wood. He said, "You can have a kitchen made like this." I'm like, "Wow, look at that material. I mean, check that out. It's like aluminium or shiny chrome, shiny and chrome. And it's got this beautiful kind of space age finish, and it's all glowy and sparkly, and it looks so cool. And what kind of material is this kitchen going to be made of? It's made of space shuttle. This is amazing. This kitchen, it's awesome." And then I got it home, and I began to fashion it into the kitchen, to cut it to shape. And then I realized, oh, it's chipboard, and everything else that I saw was just veneer. It's not even 1 millimeter thick. It's pathetic. What happens with people is that we say, "Wow, this person, shiny, so good looking, so nice, so kind, so cool, so wow." And we think, "This is going to be the best relationship ever. This person's never going to let me down. Not like all the other ones that let me down. This person is cool. They're shiny and grown." You get carried away. You think, and then you get below the 1 millimeter veneer. You get below the surface and you find a blooming chipboard along, like the rest of them. Like the rest of you. We're chipboard. You know, we're failing. You give your life to Jesus, he will start to work on you from the inside out. But we get disillusioned with people because we have illusions about them in the first place. And when we find out the reality about them, when the rubber hits the road and they let us down, that's when we feel so hurt and so broken up. But if you get into your brain that actually, maybe he was just flawed. Maybe it wasn't pure evil. They must die. They must die and suffer. Maybe they just, you know, I had a great relationship. I had this one guy, it was a little bit like Paul and Barnabas. We fitted each other really well. We'd meet up with each other. We'd do kind of adventures together. We were like the guys together, shoulder to shoulder, just cool, great relationship. I knew him for years. I mean, we went back. We had shared such stuff. Very few people in my life have been as close to me as this guy. And then one day he did something to me. And I'm like, "How could you do this to me? How could you hurt me? How could you stab me in the back? You stabby backstabber. How could you be so awful, so evil, so painful?" And it took me a long time. In fact, I remember a few months later, we were sort of talking about it. Wow, that escalated real fast. We sat down and actually the relationship, well, you know, forgave. Didn't ever come back to the same place. But he said to me, "Do you know what? I know why I did what I did to you." I said, "Why?" He said, "I just wanted to bring you down a peg." He said, "Sometimes when you talk and you tell me all the great things that you're going through, and I can't identify with all of it, I thought, just take this guy down a peg or two. Show him, you know, that he's not the bee's knees." And I went away, I'm like, "That's the worst friend ever. How could you do that to me?" And then I think, actually, yeah, maybe he was just weak. Maybe he's not the devil incarnate. Maybe I can learn from this. Maybe I could do with being less in your face about all my great life and my great wife and all of my happy stuff. You know, maybe I can learn a little bit out of this. When I think bigger, it helps me understand. But it's not just about the other person. It's actually about the process of forgiveness. You need to understand the process. To understand the process means that you've got to be calm with yourself. You've got to be patient with yourself, that it may take some time to heal. Some of you were with me on our little team when we did the noise in Maybank holiday, doing community action projects all over Bristol. And at one point, they came up, they drove a truck, and they came up, and they drove by, and they gave this to me, a petrol-run hedge trimmer. And I fired it up. Say hello to my little friend. I'm like, oh, I'm all over this stuff. Safety, health and safety gone mad. I just got my sunglasses. I got some gloves on. That's fine. Don't give me all that safety nonsense. And then I tripped and I went through my leg. And I'm like, okay, fine. But what happened is, and I was fine, you know, I was okay. It's just a flesh wound. I was too proud to cry. But I remember coming home and looking at my leg, and there's kind of bits of flap hanging off. And then I dealt with it as best I could. But I woke up the next morning, and guess what? I was not surprised that it was still injured. I didn't wake up thinking, huh, I expected it to be healed by now because I put Savlon on the night before. I understand that if I do something like that and take a little hedge trimming chunk out of my own leg, it is going to take a little. I can show it to you. There's still a kind of a weird kind of scarry zigzag. You can trace the line of the teeth. Now, I know it's going to take a little. Now, the first time I put the Savlon on, I knew. Now, part of me, you can say, well, time is a great healer, so I'll just let it be. But you let it be. You let it be. It will fester. It will get infected. Bad things will happen. I'll be hobbling and limping to Metro for the rest of my life. And for some of you, you're hobbling in the relationships that you are now because of something that happened in the past that you didn't deal with properly. For some of you, you're limping in friendships because of something that happened to you in a previous friendship, and you just thought, okay, I'm going to be guarded, I'm going to be guarded, I'm going to be guarded. And for some of you, others are running ahead of you into a happy place, to being fulfilled, to having their dreams come through, and you're limping behind because you didn't deal with it. Yes, it is going to sting a bit. No one's saying that forgiveness is easy. It's like putting Savlon on. It's like putting the plaster on. It's like washing it in the bath. It's confronting the stuff which you really don't want to look at, and you'd rather just put trousers over it. But it's getting there and saying, okay, I am going to deal with this, and I do need to disinfect, and I need to do it quickly. But I'm not surprised the next day or the day after that if it still looks a little bit of a hot mess. I'm going to expect it to be a process. Some of you, someone said, you've got to forgive. And even now, when I'm talking about forgiveness, you're thinking, I really can't do that. It's too difficult. Go along a process. Understand a little bit of time. Even if it's, I need to forgive myself for being such an idiot and getting into that relationship when everyone told me not to. And then as you go on, you get more healed and you get the ability to forgive more and to forgive more and to forgive more and to forgive more. Understanding that it's a process. Understanding that it's going to take a little time. Understanding that this may sting a bit. But if you want to get well, and if you want to be whole, and if you want to move on, and if you want to have full strength, sturdy legs of emotion like mine, then that didn't work. What you have to do is you have to engage in the process. So here's our survival guide. First of all, you have to act bigger. Secondly, you have to think bigger. But here's the best news of the evening, and then I'm going to pray for you. You have to receive bigger. The fact of the matter is that you can't do this on your own. You don't have the capacity. You don't have it in you. You're not strong enough. You're not good enough. No one is. But this is what Paul was able to say when he wrote to the Colossian church. He says, bear with each other and forgive one another. If any one of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. We know that Paul was able to forgive Barnabas, and Barnabas was able to forgive Paul, because in one of his other letters, he speaks highly of Barnabas. And he says, yeah, me and Barnabas. You want to be like me and Barnabas. Barnabas and me, we've found a way through. Actually, there was reconciliation. Even better, the last chapter, the last letter that Paul ever wrote, 2 Timothy chapter 4, he says to Timothy, who, FYI, is another timid young man. And thankfully, Barnabas has taken some of the heat out of Paul and he's become a little bit more of a people person because he doesn't have Mr. Encouragement by his side now. He has to do it. And so he's been a little bit more gentle and easy on Timothy. But when he writes to Timothy, he says, Timothy, the end is coming. I know that I've run the race and I've fought the good fight. I just need you to do one thing for me. Would you send to me John Mark? That boy is so useful to me. He's such a blessing to me. I love that kid so much. He's helped my ministry. That's what he says. Almost his very last words. Thank God that he did. Because the reason that we know John Mark, or Mark as we normally call him, is because this guy got so encouraged by being around Barnabas and so inspired by being around Paul that he went down and he recorded the life of Jesus. He was the first person to do that. He said, yeah, do you know what? This thing is going huge. Someone needs to write this stuff down so that people know how great Jesus is. And the book he wrote, we have to this day, it's called the Gospel of Mark. Because God can make good things come out of hard times. That's why Christians love to speak about hard times. Because it's not just life is tough, life is hard, get over it, buy a cat. No, it's God can do something wonderful and redemptive. And he can win back and save your heart. And he can make good things come out of it. And so Paul says, you forgive as the Lord forgave you. You receive forgiveness from Jesus, and then you can give it on. It's like this virtual circle. You receive from Jesus forgiveness. You receive from Jesus forgiveness. He's forgiven you. And as you receive forgiveness for yourself, for your sin, don't pretend that you're not chipboard too underneath. Don't pretend that you can just criticize and condemn everybody else and then stand before the holy God and then have him do the same. Actually, he gives us grace, compassion, and forgiveness. And then when we receive it, we then express it. It becomes this beautiful, circular experience. And I'm receiving forgiveness from Jesus. And then I'm able to forgive and express it. And the more I express, a weird thing happens. The more I'm able to receive the forgiveness of Jesus himself. I receive it, I express it. I receive it, I express it. I receive it, I express it. Before you know it, you've become a bigger person. You got bigger. No more the kind of weak, limbed victim who's just surviving and limping on from some past hurt. No longer the kind of person. And that means that when you think of the person that's done you wrong, you know that you can get over it. You don't feel that you want them to be in pain. You don't want them to be. You don't mind if good things happen to them. You got bigger. You got bigger. You got bigger. So this is the big idea. Forgiveness is being bigger in the present, so the past doesn't make your future smaller. You have to act bigger, think bigger, and receive bigger. And right now, Jesus wants to give you forgiveness so that you can pass it and express it to others. He wants to get that poison out of your bloodstream. He wants to heal your broken heart. And the great thing is, no matter how your heart has become, Jesus can make the forgiveness flow into it so that it becomes pure and clean and whole again. You don't even have to be a Christian. You could be someone that's still struggling, still finding your way, but you're here tonight and that means something. I know it means something. And I want to pray, and I want to pray that God would touch us with his love, make us bigger people. Amen? I'm going to invite the band to come up. I'm going to invite you to just bow your heads. If you're not into this, then there's no pressure, of course. You can just go to sleep. But I'm going to pray. And what I want to do is I want to pray that God would pour forgiveness into your heart and allow you to begin the process of becoming whole, becoming a bigger person. Because Jesus followers are big people. They do big things, things that others find amazing. So let's pray. What I want to do is I want to ask you to close your eyes right now. And if there's someone in your past that has hurt you, a relationship that's been broken, I want you to imagine that person. And if you know that you're not fully free of that hurt and that past, then I'd like to pray for you. So if that's you, just while everyone's got their eyes closed, just put your hand up where you are and I'm going to pray. Just keep your hand up. Dear Lord God, I want to pray that you'd release forgiveness into hearts tonight. Lord, I want to pray that you would push that message through. You're bigger than this. I made you bigger than this. You can be bigger than this. I release forgiveness into your life. And I want to pray that as you forgive us, we will be able to forgive those who've hurt us, who have wronged us, who have messed us up. I pray right now, Jesus, that you'd be healing hearts and that you'd give the ability that we need to pass on the healing of Jesus. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.